Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our first sessions this morning, Wednesday, October 20th, at the third McGill Conference on Global Food Security. I hope everybody had a very pleasant evening after our two guest speakers last night. I certainly enjoyed their presentations, and I hope you did as well. And I can assure you, as you look at the program, that the next day and a half or so will be equally exciting. To start off our program this morning, we have a special keynote address, and this is by Dr. Eugene Terry. I have a two-page bio for him, and if I was to read this two-page bio, that would take up, I'm sure, at least half of his allotted time to speak, so I'm not going to do that. And last night when I introduced him to a few people at the reception and talked about his distinguished credentials, he corrected me and interjected by saying, well, his most impressive credential is that he's a graduate of McDonald College. So it's always good to have a homeboy back on home turf. And Eugene, it is a distinct pleasure for me to welcome you back to McGill. Unfortunately, we're not on the McDonald campus, but I know you have very fond memories of the campus when you were a student, but the time will not permit you to recount some of those fond memories, but I'm sure you will recount them socially over the next day and a half. But it's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Eugene Terry, who is originally from Sierra Leone. He holds a BSc in Agriculture and an MSc in Plant Pathology from McDonald and a PhD in Plant Pathology from the University of Illinois. He has had very extensive experience in many parts of the world, primarily in Africa. He was a plant pathologist and director of corporation at IITA in Nigeria. He then went on to become the first director general of WARDA, which is now the Africa Rice Center in Côte d'Ivoire, a position he held for 9 years, where he provided leadership for the path-breaking research conducted with Dr. Monty Jones on the new rice for Africa, the Nerica varieties. He then joined the World Bank in Washington, first as an advisor in agricultural research and extension, and was later the crops advisor in the Agriculture and Rural Development Department of the World Bank. On retirement from the bank, Dr. Terry has become very involved with many foundations in Africa and assisting with public-private ventures and partnerships in Africa. He's also, as you can see earlier from his credentials, been involved with the CG in Africa, and today he's a member of the board of the World Vegetable Center. And Eugene, it's a pleasure for me to welcome you. I'm glad that you accepted our invitation to be with us, and we look forward to your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm particularly pleased that I've been asked to make this short presentation, and I've decided that perhaps the best way to satisfy the requirements for such a keynote, especially with some very good guidance and guidelines from the dean, is to choose a topic which has in it elements of global challenges, elements of agricultural research for development. Such a theme provides for me an opportunity and a context for a broad global perspective, which is one of the things Chandra wanted me to talk about. He also wanted me to come up with some broad key messages to a mixed audience. I understand that the audience is going to be composed of lawyers and development specialists, and it's a very intimidating audience, all these bright, eager young people who I know have a million and one questions to ask. But I'm particularly pleased that I'm able to at least talk to you. I may not be able to answer your questions, but at least we can provoke some discussions. It is important also for me to try and align this theme with the broad mandate of the faculty's thrust, the Faculty of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences. So my challenge is to deliver a keynote message using 10 PowerPoint slides with 5 take-home messages in 15 to 20 minutes. And so if you forget everything else that I talk about, at least I hope you can remember these, that enhancing food, health, nutrition, and please be aware of the nexus of food, health, nutrition, security, and the nexus of also reducing poverty in developing countries. This will require, one, transformation of the global agricultural research for development system. It will require quite a bit of investment into transformative agriculture in the form of development interventions, and I will give you an example of one such interventions that I'm involved in called Transform Africa. Incidentally, I know that I'll be throwing at you some new concepts, new ideas, new initiatives, and a lot of alphabet soup, but I suspect that you would be familiar with most of the acronyms that I will throw at you, except for this one, which is Transform Africa, and I have a two-pager that I will leave with the faculty so they can make copies to distribute. This Transform Africa initiative is going to be concentrated in the African development corridors. It will require significant new investments in institutional reforms and restructuring. It will require strong emphasis on the role of science, and I put that in bold because I believe that that is one of the most important imperatives for this faculty, that is to train young scientists and to mentor and to guide and to mold the thinking of the new scientists that are going to help to solve today's and tomorrow's problems. And specifically, to get them to think about how to translate agricultural research outputs into development impact. What I believe, I think my colleague from Syngenta Foundation is here, I sit on the board, Marco Ferroni, and I know you'll be hearing from Marco later, what the Syngenta Foundation considers the distinction between concentrating on the voyage, which is what they believe we public research scientists do, as opposed to concentrating on the destination, which is what they claim the private sector does. So we do have a challenge, and that challenge is to translate agricultural research outputs into development impact. And finally, one of my final key take-home messages is the need for innovative public-private partnerships. I was very pleased last night to hear David Nabarro talk about how exciting it's going to be in the next couple of years because of the potential for public-private partnerships and what can be achieved with the smallholder at the core of these initiatives. So what are the global food security challenges? I don't want to bore you with the grim statistics, but at least the following you must keep at the back of your mind as we try to tackle these problems. The 2050 projections for global population, as you heard last night, is for 9 billion people, of which 1 billion, and the most vulnerable of whom are the women and children, will be hungry. That food demands will increase to meet needs of the growing urban populations, which will increase from 3.4 billion to over 6 billion. And those have to be fed. And recognize that some of them will not be contributing towards the production of food on which they will depend. That environmental degradation will increase and continue to threaten sustainability. And that there are going to continue to be increasing global energy challenges. There are more challenges, but I want us to concentrate on these. So, Chandra asked me to talk a little bit about what was the consensus from the 2010 Global Conference on Agricultural Research for Development, which was held in Montpellier in March this year. I was fortunate and privileged to be one of the authors, the four global authors, of the background paper which formed the backdrop for that meeting. And that background paper was titled Transforming Agricultural Research for Development, TAR4D. The authors were Uma Lele, the most senior author among us, Jules Preti of the University of Sussex, myself, and Eduardo Trigo from Argentina. The consensus for a well-functioning agricultural research for development system was, one, highest priority should go to science, which is at the heart of improving crop and animal genotypes, which would be the basis of increasing and improving productivity, food quality, nutrition, to meet the challenges. That technology delivery systems for smallholders will be also at the heart of this transformation. So again, I recall the comments last night that this is where the action is going to be. The smallholders are going to be at the heart of the solutions to the problems of feeding the very, very important group of people that continue to have hunger and poverty as a most intractable challenge. That there has to be incentives for national scientists. Present company accepted. We know that it is not the brightest and the best that go into agriculture. We know that the faculty is doing something to change that, and it's making the profession very challenging, very attractive. And so we need to build incentives for those who are going to be dedicating themselves to solving problems at the national level. Because as much as it is important that there is a global network, knowledge network, for agricultural science and agricultural development, most of the challenges and most of the work will have to be done at the national level. This next consensus is a very important one, and I think it supports the decision to create a global food security institute at McGill. It is to use collective capacities, the collective capacities of a range of partners who are going to contribute to the innovative systems that are going to help to tackle our problems. The consensus was also that there is a need for increased human and institutional investments. The dean made the comment last night about the declining investments into national, regional, and even international initiatives for solving and tackling food security problems. And finally, the consensus was that there has to be accountability to stakeholders. There has to be performance measurements and impact measurements for the investments that are made into some of these initiatives. So this brings me from the collective, the use of collective capacities, that was one of the consensus. This brings me to my suggestion for positioning the McGill Global Food Security Institute. I believe that this is an excellent opportunity to be part of this collective global ownership of the challenges for food security. And I congratulate you for seizing this opportunity to be part of that. I believe that McGill is well positioned to make interventions, specifically in what David Nabarro called last night the nexus of food security, food safety, nutrition, and health. And I think you should capitalize on this. Now, as I said earlier, technology will be at the heart of these new initiatives and these new concepts. Transformation will also be at the heart. And I venture to say that some of these new directions and targets will relate to, one, transformative agriculture for increased productivity and commercialization and income generation for smallholders in developing countries. Last night we were told that we must concentrate not only on lives, but on livelihoods. And so the opportunity to integrate smallholder production into the food economy, into the agricultural economy, to be able to at least achieve, one, a level of food security, but two, to enhance the potential for income generation, is going to be at the heart of transformative agriculture. I'd like to read you a quote that relates to my next, what I'm calling a technological new direction and target. It is called innovation's holy grail. Affordability and sustainability are replacing premium pricing and abundance as innovation's drivers. But few executives know how to cope with the shift. Companies must make their offerings accessible to a greater number of people by selling them cheaply and must develop more products and services with fewer resources. Westerners are struggling to tackle this challenge, but some enterprises in developing countries, particularly in India, are showing the way by practicing three types of Gandhian innovation: disrupting business models, modifying organizational capabilities, and creating or sourcing new capabilities. You can find more on this from the Harvard Business Review of the date is, I think it's August 2010, and the authors are Prahalad and Michelle Carr. So that is certainly one of the challenges and the directions for the future. Technologies to create more products with fewer resources and to sell these cheaply to reach far more people. And a third target would be institutional transformation for advanced biotechnology tools and products. Again, I believe that the assets that an organization, that an institution like McGill has to contribute and to provide direction for advanced biotechnology development, for advanced biotechnology tools and products, would be one of the most exciting new targets for the technological interventions that will form part of this very important set of transformations that are taking place. And of course, I'm sure most of you are preoccupied and are thinking of new ways and new technologies to generate renewable bioenergy. So I come to what we will call the exciting public sector-private sector partnerships, especially with regard to a role for the McGill Global Food Security Institute. The challenge, of course, is to complement the private sector's technology generation and value creation process in developing countries where the private sector is not well embedded. The Dean and I were talking this morning about some of the reasons that have been given for why the private sector has not found it acceptable and exciting to begin to invest in developing countries at the level that would be required to make these transformative jumps. We are told that the profit potential, the potential for huge profits, simply does not exist in the developing country settings for a whole range of reasons. I venture to submit humbly that this is not correct, that there are a whole range of private sector type interventions, private sector type initiatives that are taking place in developing countries, and that they need to be looked at very carefully and very closely. I particularly want to commend the Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture, on whose board I am privileged to serve, for making some of the kinds of interventions that are being made to encourage private sector investment, to pave the way, to put the ingredients in place for private sector investments to take place in these developing country settings. I believe, however, that there's a need for assistance. There's a need for interventions. And I believe that, again, the McGill Global Food Security Institute can come up with some institutional innovations that will build public sector capacity to do some very important things in terms of the ingredients to enhance this public-private sector partnership. I am concentrating on technologies, and even specifically, I'm putting emphasis on proprietary technologies, because my experience working with, and here's another alphabet soup, but you can Google this, the African Agriculture Technology Foundation, which is dedicated to promoting public-private sector partnerships to access, to negotiate, and to acquire advanced proprietary technology for smallholder agriculture. Such technology as would not have been accessible to smallholders through the normal channels. This is a very important and exciting new phase, new set of initiatives that I believe the McGill Global Food Security Institute can dedicate itself to. Let me repeat, it takes some special skills to access and to put together the intelligence that will be required to negotiate and to acquire this advanced proprietary technology. Once they have been acquired, to manage the product development and deployment of these new technologies. I give you two examples here that this organization that I was the founding director of, the AATF, is engaged in: water-efficient maize for Africa. And I venture to say that if we can solve the problem of drought susceptibility of maize in the continent of Africa, that would be a major and a huge contribution towards global food security, towards African food security, and in the long run, and in the greater context, global food security. And this is, of course, an advanced technology that has built in a level of tolerance to drought in maize. It is now at the stage where it is being tested in confined field trials in six African countries to see if they will perform at the level at which the company that developed this technology has projected that they will perform. So we're all waiting very anxiously to see how these new varieties will work. Parallelly, there are, and as I say, this is transgenic maize. Parallelly, there's another initiative which is for maize that are developed through conventional breeding approaches, again, to tackle drought. With these two very important initiatives, we believe that we are going to be able to find a set of solutions to a very intractable problem. I give you another good example of an advanced technology which would otherwise not have been accessible to smallholders, and that is the control of Striga. The technology was developed by a company, BASF, and it was one of the most elegant technologies in agriculture that I have seen. They were able to identify a gene in maize that is tolerant to the herbicide that kills the weed that invades the maize. The technology was developed around the concept that when the Striga, which is a parasitic plant, the seeds of Striga survive in the soil where maize is planted year after year for years. What triggers the germination of the Striga seed, this parasitic plant, is the exudates that emanate from maize when maize germinates. So the technology was to coat the seeds of maize, this maize that has tolerance to herbicide, coat these seeds with a herbicide. On germination of maize, the exudates trigger germination of the Striga, and the herbicide kills the Striga and leaves the maize standing tall. This had to be negotiated very strictly to make it accessible to smallholders who now only have to buy seed that is coated with the herbicide, and they have to do nothing else. So we believe that there is going to be a host of these technologies, and it is up to you, the young students who are being groomed, who are being mentored, who are being trained to solve problems, to begin to identify these traits, to identify the key constraints, to identify the priority traits that will address these key constraints, to learn how to manage intellectual property, to be able to handle liability protection, which is what these companies indicate is one of their most important challenges and their most important fears, and to come up with product stewardship interventions and compliance with regulatory and biosafety regimes. These are all very important component of this access and acquisition of these technologies, which are going to be solving smallholder problems. Remember, I did put emphasis on proprietary technology, and that is to make the distinction between these technologies as opposed to those that can be acquired through conventional approaches, conventional breeding. Somebody was saying last night that the orange flesh sweet potato is not a result of advanced technology because already, and I can see the person who was making that comment to me last night, that already the germplasm of a lot of sweet potato already had high levels of beta carotene. And it took a conventional breeding approach to be able to develop this. This is correct. But here, I am here to tell you that there are quite a few problems that are intractable and that some of them would require interventions at a higher level of advanced cell biology to be able to come up with some of the traits that are required to resolve these problems. So let me end by saying that I believe that McGill University has the assets that can support the work of a global food security institute because it has expertise and in its faculties and departments of biological sciences, which is at the heart of these technologies, and that, in fact, the mandate of the Agricultural and Environmental Sciences Faculty is precisely in support of some of these interventions. It has a good engineering school. It has excellent programs in technology and biotechnology. Last night, our session was opened by the Dean of the Law School, and as I mentioned, intellectual property management and liability protection would also be at the heart of this kind of a program. So the Law and Legal Studies Department will be able to provide excellent support for this initiative. It has a good business management program and would have excellent communication support systems for such an enterprise. I thank you for your attention, and I hope I've been able to leave perhaps 5 minutes or 7 minutes for a few questions. Thank you.
Questions. There's some microphones in the room, so please feel free to use the microphones, and please kindly identify your name and organization. Thank you. John.
Hello?
It's working.
Okay. John Canelli, University of Alberta. Dr. Terry, really enjoyed your talk, in particular the emphasis that you placed on building national scientific capacity. And you also pointed out the role that universities like McGill play in educating scientists from developing countries where there's a great need in terms of food security. However, unfortunately, what often happens is this is a brain drain away from those developing countries because the scientists at the end of their training often are reluctant to return to their home country because they don't have the research, the universities are not, don't have the capacity to do the types of research that they've been trained for. The structural situation of those universities in terms of career prospects and so on are such that people often do not return. So what is a good thing on the one hand in terms of educating those people doesn't seem to translate into scientific capacity building in their home country. So I wonder if you could comment on that in terms of what can be done to turn that around. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me first of all say that you have identified a very important issue which is confronting development specialists and policymakers in developing countries. To the extent that two new programs in sub-Saharan Africa, which I'm involved in, have attempted to tackle this directly. One of them is called the African Center for Crop Improvement, dedicated to training plant breeders from eastern southern Africa at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. A parallel program called the West African Center for Crop Improvement, located at the University of Ghana in Legon, in Accra. What is interesting about these two programs is that it stipulates that the students and the candidates that are admitted into the program should already have started to do their work within their national programs. And it is their national programs that support their applications for these scholarships. They go to the University of KwaZulu-Natal and do a two-year coursework and prepare for their thesis research there, and then go home and do the thesis research, sometimes on topics which they had already initiated before they enrolled in that program, and do this thesis research over a three-year period. Two things are important here. One, they have support from the university and from senior scientists within their home programs to conduct their thesis research. The second important issue here is that for areas in which there are deficiencies in their programs, they are tied up, they are engaged, they are associated with universities in industrial countries. So, for example, I would not be surprised if the faculty at McGill is already associated with PhD programs in Ghana, in Burkina Faso, or in Zimbabwe, where help and support is being provided through a university relationship. So the University of Cornell, Texas A&M, are all universities participating in training these people in their home countries, not in Texas, where the excuse can be given that, well, we do not have this kind of facility at home, so I'm not going home and I'm staying here. Now, that does not mean that I'm saying that those who, for one reason or the other, decide not to go home because the incentives are not there are wrong, but you've got to make a judgment as to where you can best contribute towards the food security challenges of your country. Some people who stay in their universities in which they train are still doing good work that impacts on some of the challenges at home.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Mushtaq Ahmed with CEDA, Ottawa. Dr. Terry, Eugene Terry, thank you for a very interesting presentation. My observation and concern relates to two issues. One is about the traditional knowledge systems. As the British scholar Ashton has in his book on British Agricultural Revolution, he observes that many innovations are made at the farm level. In fact, there were some programs on farmer scholar program with the Cornell University, which in Philippines and other places, trying to take out some of the good things from the good lessons from the farmers' fields, because many of these things, as Ashton has observed, dies with the farmers, this new knowledge, new innovations that they make, because it is not documented properly. The second aspect is about the extension. The U.S. land-grant university system based on this taking two-way channel on the extension, going out to the farmers' fields, identifying problems, coming back, solving, and taking it back. So you haven't mentioned anything about these two issues, basically relating to the extension and on these traditional knowledge systems, how they are related, interface with this framework that you have presented. The other thing is the Forum for African Agriculture has about 10 elements in it. One is cost recovery. Do you think that cost recovery at this stage, when we are talking about the smallholder farmers, should be an issue? Thank you.
Let me try very briefly to see if I can address all three issues. With regard to the traditional knowledge systems, I am particularly pleased that the Dean, in his introduction, had indicated that the work that was done on developing the New Rice for Africa, for which Dr. Monty Jones, who is the executive director of FARA that you just mentioned, that Dr. Monty Jones did that work. At the heart of that work, apart from using some elegant technology to bridge the gap and to overcome some of the problems, the barriers of interspecies hybridization, that is Oryza sativa Asian rice, Oryza glaberima African rice, and finding ways to overcome the incompatibility and to be able to have progenies from that cross. He also used some very basic participatory approaches using farmer knowledge to be able to determine the existence of some of these traits that would otherwise have not been looked upon as significant. So the use of traditional knowledge systems, the use of the participatory approach to breeding clearly indicate that this is an area that can be explored and exploited some more, and that, in fact, we now know that we cannot make the kinds of progress that would begin to answer some of our global food security problems if we do not integrate into our innovation systems the traditional knowledge that the farmers bring to solutions. The second issue with regard to extension, I suspect that my colleague from the Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture will talk quite a bit of some of the initiatives that his foundation has started on how to use input suppliers and people who are engaged in managing outputs from farms as extension agents. We believe that those are the ones who have the greatest vested interest in running efficient extension systems, as opposed to the old traditional methods of civil servants who were hired, paid a salary at the end of the month, whether there was accountability or not, for extending any of the innovations and technology from research. So I think our colleague Marco will probably talk a little bit about that. I must confess, I'm not familiar with some of the things that you talk about in terms of cost recovery. What I'm very wedded to and what I like about the way FARA has approached the very important area of comprehensive African agricultural development program is the fact that it has four pillars, and that if you pay attention to these four pillars, almost everything that you do in agricultural development will be wrapped around those four pillars. And they are land and water management, trade and infrastructure, food security and nutrition, which is what has brought us here today, and research for technology generation and dissemination. Those four pillars are the ones that I think almost everything that anybody who's engaged in African agriculture development have to pay attention to. And I'm sorry I cannot comment too much on the cost recovery issue.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, thanks, Dr. Terry. Time is against us, but Dr. Terry will be with us for the rest of the conference. So over the next 2 days, please don't hesitate to ask him any further questions or discuss any further points with him. Eugene, thank you very much for your presentation.